ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
So, let's start tonight, if you'll agree, with a guided meditation. And I'll explain to you why it relates to the topic of balance once we come out of the meditation, if you'll trust me that long. And I'll just take you through a few phases of meditation, which is something that anyone can do, because we're all equipped. We have actually an internal world, and the practice of meditation, in part, has a lot to do with turning our focus inwardly and observing what's there. So, please take a comfortable position in your seats. We'll be doing this for about 7 or 8 minutes. So please close your eyes and prepare to look inwardly. This is what I call focused attention training. We train in many different ways, but the most important asset that every one of us has is our own attention. And you have the choice of where to direct it. That's our main freedom in life. Where to put our attention. So why not develop the ability to direct it where you want it to go? Focus attention training will help you develop the ability to direct your attention, to become aware when your mind has wandered, to redirect your focus, and to be aware of your awareness. Now that you're comfortable, your eyes are closed, you can prepare to look inward. And for a little while, release yourself from all your responsibilities. Bring your attention to your breath. Mentally say in on the inward breaths and out on your exhalations. See each breath as a gift that you have in this moment, the best possible gift that anyone could give you is your breath. You're now walking on a soft, golden brown pathway with a tangle of green trees and flowers on either side. At the end of the pathway is a yellow door. As you push the door open, you are greeted by an expanse of soothing light. The light envelops you, and you feel warm and safe. You've entered your inner world, the place in which you can taste the nectar of your own consciousness. Close the door to the outside world behind you and be fully present. Remain unattached from any thoughts. Observe them, but don't engage them. You are now a dispassionate witness with no need or responsibility to react. Deepen your breathing. Relax your feet and legs. let them be heavy. Surrender them to the weight. Relax your abdomen and chest, your rib cage. Let go of your back, shoulders, and neck. And release any tension around your head or face. And just breathe. Now that you're observant, feel positively that you exist. And as an observer, look at your hands. Bring your awareness to them. Now observe your legs. Observe your head. Bring your attention to your hair. Notice that you are the one looking at them, but that they are not you. You are separate from the things that you see. The seer and the seen are different. Feel that you are not the body. Rather, you're sitting within the body, observing it. Now see your thoughts and feel that you are not your thoughts because you're the one observing them. Now become aware that you have the power to hear, to see, to touch, to smell, to walk, speak, digest, and that these are all inexplicable powers given to you as a gift. Now become aware of your intelligence. Notice how your intelligence gives you directions like those from an unseen expert who is always with you and available, even when you sleep. The Yoga Sutras call this benevolent guide the Super Self. Please remain in this space and listen to this text from the Bhagavad Gita and meditate on this text. The sky, due to its subtle nature, does not mix with anything, although it is all-pervading. Similarly, the spiritual essence, the consciousness situated in transcendental vision, does not mix with the body, though situated in that body. Thus, knowing yourself to be a transcendental being, steady your mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence. Now focus your concentration back on your breath. Move your fingers around, wiggle your toes. Be aware that you're in a physical body and you can rub your hands together. Then gradually open your eyes come back into the room. Welcome back. So, who here has ever shopped when they're hungry? Even though you're not supposed to. You did it? You did it? You did it? How did it work out? There's a way in which when we go out into the world before we feel balanced, which means we have some inner experience, there's a lot of distraction, there are a lot of opportunities that call to us which may not be to our full benefit. And the idea of balance is very important, and it's related to finding our center, having an inner experience, as we just had together, where to one degree or another, we experience that we're observing what's going on. And that means we have life, we are life. The consciousness is life. And we also have a life situation. There's a lot that's complex usually about our life situation. And when I'm absorbed in it, it's like watching a movie. Had the experience probably, you go into a movie theater, you sit down, there are lots of things on your mind, but when the light comes on the screen and the movie comes on and the plot begins to unfold, it's possible to actually enter into the plot itself and practically become one with the movie. So much so, have you ever had the experience when you're watching that you suddenly feel various emotions related to the storyline? Anyone want to admit that? Did you ever cry at a movie?
Yeah.
Do you ever become angry or scared? So in a similar way, I'm focusing my attention externally. The wisdom literatures talk about the way in which I become captured by my life situation. And I might even identify myself with my life situation, say, this is me, this is happening to me. In fact, I project my consciousness into material things, and then they become a problem for me, because material things generally are a little clunky compared to what we are, which is very subtle. And the practice of meditation, which we just did, and which anyone can do at any time through introspection, which means to look inside and see, become aware that I'm aware, become aware that I'm actually conscious, and that I can be the witness of my life situation without entering into it. It's going on anyway, like a movie. But just as when the movie stops and the lights come back on, I'll notice that I have a separate life. So there's a possibility of actually noticing at any time. I can break the cycle of identification with my external situation in my life by noticing that I'm the one watching it, and I have a choice of where to place my attention. Now, back to the idea of shopping when you're hungry. When I feel a little bit of satisfaction, even a molecule of experience from inwardly looking, and as I pointed out in the guided meditation, tasting the nectar of your own consciousness, this fortifies me so that the various kinds of enticements from the world or complexities which may boggle the mind or make me feel overwhelmed, make me feel out of balance, tend to take on a different tenor. And I feel my own fullness. It's like when you're not hungry and you go shopping, you can take it or leave it, right? But when you're starving and you go out, you probably take everything and fill up the basket. And when you get home, you think, why did I do that? So one of the primary way that the ancient texts of wisdom on yoga describe gaining balance means find out who you are. Look inwardly and observe it for yourself. It's not something that is very far off, because it's you. And when you notice what you actually are, then it becomes more important than what you have. What you are, please repeat,
what you are
is more important than what you have.
Is more important than what you have.
And if you realize that what I am, it's something that's so magical, and it's more weighty than all the things in the world or all the situations in the world. If I can see that, even for a fraction of a second, it gives me this kind of internal fortitude through which, when I deal with the world, I have a modicum of perspective that helps me to make good choices, to not become overly attached to everything that happens or to be reactive when something happens to me. Rather, I have a choice. I can notice it for what it is. So, let's talk about balance itself, because you brought it up. Why don't we try this? Let's all stand up for a minute. Now, make sure you're not close to something that you can fall on, or, I mean, that may be hard to do, but just be a little careful. This is an exercise that can be a little challenging. Just stand on one foot for a minute. Lift one foot off the ground and stand on one foot and see how you do. We won't judge anybody, but you can see for yourself. I just want you to observe what happens when you stand on one foot and whether you're perfectly still or not. Who said mm-mm? Okay, not perfectly still. Are you all perfectly still, or are you moving around? I'm definitely moving. And if you concentrate around your ankle, you'll notice that there are a lot of muscles going back and forth, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. Now put your foot back down. You might want to try your other foot this time. Now go up on one foot. Stand up there. Now please be careful, but close your eyes and stay on one foot. I'm noticing I'm noticing that in the audience here, it's a little different than the first time, right?
Yeah.
Did you notice? Try it again. One foot. Try it again. Close your eyes. Careful. Okay. Have you had the experience? You tried it? Okay, let's sit back down and talk about it. So, one thing we can observe about balance itself in the physical body, which is a very complex, it's a complex algorithm that takes place. There's a kind of a gyroscope we have in our inner ear. When that gets a little bit off kilter, then we'll find that we're very dizzy and it's hard to walk in a straight line even. So that's going on. And we notice that there's a lot of synapses in your nervous systems that are being used, and the muscles we notice are compensating back and forth. And I think some of us observed that we're not completely still when we're balanced. Can we get any consensus on that? Yes, moving. So the first point I'd like to make about balance is this. It doesn't mean to be perfectly still. What it means is you know how to pull back to the center. And this is true with airline flights. I did a little research, and airlines, although they apparently go in a straight line, they're actually always pulling back to the center. There is no such a thing as a perfect straight line with an airline flight. In fact, most of the time they're off course. But if they're able to pull back to the actual direction that they're supposed to go, at least 5% of the time, they can make it from point A to point B. And so in our own lives, an expectation that I'm always on track may be unreasonable and feel may be overwhelming. However, if I have a sense for what my actual goal is, and this is the second part of the exercise, remember how hard it was to balance when your eyes were closed? So this is a metaphor for whether or not we know where we're going. Because, of course, from Alice in Wonderland, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And it's really hard to know how to pull back to the center or how to stay balanced if you don't have a clear goal. So that's first point is that balance doesn't mean stillness. It means adjusting and pulling back to the center. And the second is be very clear about what your center is or what your goal is. And the more clear you are, the more you can pull back to that and you can achieve a balance in your life. This is very theoretical kind of stuff to start with, but I thought it was an important basis to get this idea of what is balance established, at least to some degree. So I want to make a practical point. Are there any other chairs, or is standing room only in the back? Okay, good, they're taking care of you. Welcome, thank you for coming. And maybe we should try, if you want, do you need us to move up a little bit? Yeah. Please move up by 7.2 inches. Okay. How's everybody so far? On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 means you're completely happy and 1 means you got to go. You all right? Okay. So, I'm going to stay a little bit philosophical just for a few more minutes, and also I'm going to take some reflections, which means I'm going to ask you to reflect back anything that you've heard or experienced so far, and that will help amplify some of the points. So as far as being clear on our goals, there are, in the wisdom texts of yoga, three very distinct paths that are defined. One is called the path of enjoyment, or actually what it's called is the path of exploitation. I'm living in the world, and my main goal is to get as much stuff as I can, and to position myself in such a way that I can be materially happy and develop wealth, and this is one of the paths, is to put everything I have into trying to adjust myself so that I can be satisfied in this world. And that might include living at the cost of others. That's why sometimes it's called the path of exploitation or the path of karma, because in order to get ahead, if you look carefully in this world, sometimes it's at the cost of others. So that's one path. There are other paths. Another path is called the path of renunciation, in which I observe how, when I try to enjoy the world, first of all, it's a temporary assignment because things tend to diminish and go away from me in the world. Also, I don't like to exploit other people. Therefore, one might say, I'll just renounce the world and give it all up. Does that sound familiar, these two paths? One is called the path of enjoyment. The other path is called path of renunciation, giving things up. So according to the wisdom texts, these two paths are out of balance. They can't be sustained. It's like a swing of a pendulum, and it's called chapala sukha, flickering happiness, which leads to bhoga tyaga. Bhoga means I'm trying to enjoy as much as possible through my senses, but when that fails, then I become frustrated, and tyaga, I want to give it all up. So in this way, the pendulum swings from enjoyment to renunciation, and back and forth it goes. Then there's a third path that's described, and this is the path of balance. This is called the path of dedication, or the path of giving, of service, selfless service. Now, counterintuitively, at least to my mind, the idea of serving others selflessly sounds maybe like I'm being exploited. At least when we talk about this in corporates, oftentimes people say, yeah, but you know, if I do that, then people will just take advantage of me. It's not about allowing people to use you as a doormat. But it is about developing a service mind and using whatever things one has for a higher purpose. Because things actually become a burden to us when I try to possess them and I try to keep them. This is the idea. However, if you're using them for a higher purpose, there's a kind of very remarkable sense of satisfaction through service. It's not something that you can necessarily measure on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. But if you had a meter that could measure satisfaction, you might find that giving is more satisfying than taking. And in fact, I read a survey of 10,000 students in Canada, and they were asked around the holiday times, which is better, to give or receive? And what do you think they said? It almost sounds cliche, but go ahead and say it. To give, everyone says it. It's sort of a natural human response, which is better, to give or receive? And it's like, to give. Like, what? Who thought of that? And where did that come from? In the idea of Darwinian evolution, it doesn't even sound accurate, because after all, the more that you, more territory you can take, the more you can exploit others, the more you can be on top. But in the Yoga Wisdom text, it is said that actually by giving we grow, and by giving we actually feel inner satisfaction. And this can be tried through service, selfless service. This is called the path of dedication. So on a number line, there are negative numbers. This is compared to the life of trying to enjoy the material world, because the more I get into it, the more I get into debt. It's like spending on a credit card. The more I spend, the more it seems like I'm enjoying life and I have a lot of opulence, but then the bill comes later. And do you know what that bill's called in the Yoga Wisdom text? Karma. It's called karma. You get a little window letter and it says, by the way, you enjoyed and therefore you owe. Now you have to pay. And that's why there's that old saying, I owe, so it's off to work I go. Because work means karma. Karma means work. Comes from the root word in Sanskrit, kri, which means to work. And this means I'm paying off a debt. In fact, when somebody's born, there's an expectation that, you know, we're developing a college fund for you because later on you're going to have to work hard. And nowadays they'll have to work forever to pay off student loans. So that debt is there on the material side. So that's the negative side of the number line. So then someone might reason, like, I don't like this arrangement. And there are many philosophies in the world that say that the material enjoyment is kind of a farce, because you end up more entangled. Have you heard such things before? Now, I could then reason logically, and I'll say, I'll come up the negative numbers on the number line, and I'll come all the way to zero. And that would be an idea that I'll just renounce the world and have nothing. I'll have no thoughts, because desires, thoughts, they lead to misery and attachment to the world. This is a philosophical school of thought. However, zero is zero. And let's say, like in the old days when there used to be strong unions, people didn't like their work, they go on strike. Anybody here old enough to remember that, back in the old days? People go on strike. And this is kind of like being at zero, because you're not working. But you're not going to stay on strike. Sooner or later, you're going to have to go back to work. Yeah. Now, the idea of dedication or selfless service is the positive numbers. There's actually something in it that is so tangible that we can feel it. We actually feel that we grow and we feel satisfied and balanced. So it's a way of working in the world without becoming encumbered by the things and the idea that if I get enough things and I organize my environment in such a way that if I organize my environment properly, then I can actually be happy, I'll be at rest. But it never actually happens, because the environment always changes, and whatever things I have diminish and they get repossessed. One way or the other, they're taken away. So it's very frustrating. And if I just renounce them all, it's illogical. And I'll give you an example of what I mean by that. Let's just say if I walk into the Bank of America, and I don't have an account at the Bank of America, but even if I did, this would make sense to you. And I walk in and I say that I make an announcement, perhaps with a megaphone, to everybody in the bank that I renounce this bank and all the money in it. By your reaction, I can understand that you've seen this as illogical. So in a similar way, if I just declare that I renounce this world, it's similarly illogical because it's not mine to renounce. These are not all my things. But if I think in the terms of dedication or selfless service or using whatever things I have for a higher cause, then that makes sense because it's naturally satisfying, and also no one will complain. There's nothing that becomes out of place, nothing put out of place in the world when I'm thinking in terms of selfless service to others. So this is a way of thinking that actually naturally creates balance. And it's almost like flipping a switch. I can be in a very frustrating situation and think that I don't feel right, I feel frustrated, I don't have enough. But when I start to think, how can I serve others? How can I use the things that I have for a higher cause to do good for others? Then there's a natural satisfaction that comes, and I don't have to wait. It comes as quickly as flipping a light switch. In fact, I remember many years ago, I read a book by Dale Carnegie. Anybody heard of Dale Carnegie? Yeah. And he wrote a book called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. So he did a lot of research, as he did for all his books, and he had many different anecdotes of people who had been really suffering because they were so worried about the life situation that they were attached to. But then he gave this antidote to worry, and that was when you're in the most worrisome situation to think about reaching out and doing some service, doing some selfless service. And he said it's remarkable how from that limited perspective that I'm suffering, I'm a victim, when I reach out and I do some self-service, selfless service, I grow, and almost immediately I feel relief from that oppressing world of my mind, my small mind, that I'm woe is me and I'm a victim. And this is something that many people reported on experiencing moving into selfless service. So this is a philosophical point, but it can be helpful because there are these three paths recommend or actually define ways in which I might think about the world and the way I may interact with it. And if I'm oriented towards selfless service, then I'll feel more balance in my life. Now, before I move on to the next couple of parts, I'll take a few reflections, if you don't mind. And that means just to reflect back to me. Don't put it in a question yet. We'll take those later because questions can take us in different directions. But if you'll just harmonize and reflect back anything that you heard, any concept that you heard, it doesn't have to be the phraseology doesn't have to be exactly the same, but just the idea can be reflected back. You'll see what happens. It amplifies it into the room and into our minds and hearts. Let's try it.
Calibrate.
What did, was that you?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Here, use the mic, please.
Calibrate.
Can you say a little more about calibrate? Like what context you're thinking?
Well, okay, going back to standing on one foot with or without an eye closed, your eyes closed. You're constantly readjusting in little ways and remeasuring.
Yes.
To stay in that centered position.
Yes. Balance means, as you were saying, calibrate and bringing back to the center. And there's thousands of little ways in which your body is doing that to stay centered. And so balance doesn't mean staying still. It means knowing how to pull back and be in that center position, at least some of the time. A couple more. What did you hear so far that stuck? And it could be even about the meditation, what you experienced. Let's just gather in what we've got so far. Yes. Oh, I saw the smile. It usually means something's coming out. Want to try?
I like the section about Alice in Wonderland.
Yes.
Where if you don't know where you're going, all the roads will lead you there.
Yes.
And so that it's really, really important that you know where to go. Because otherwise, you're basically just reactive and wandering around.
Yes, thanks for bringing it up. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And here's a very, very practical exercise that I learned many years ago from one of my mentors, and it may sound overly simple, but I dare you to try it and see if it doesn't create more balance in your life. Get a legal size pad, get a do not disturb sign, and get a pen. And take a little time off for yourself. Go into a room somewhere and close a door, put the do not disturb sign on the door, shut off all electronic devices, anything with an on-off switch, shut it off. Are you with me so far?
Yes.
Okay. And sit there in front of your pad, and then write down what you want. What are the most important things to you in your life right now? What are the most cherished goals that you have in your life? I guarantee, I promise you, taking an hour to do this, which would be a really good chunk of time, by yourself with a legal pad and a pen, writing it down, will give you so much clarity and balance that when you come out of that room, no one will recognize you. So what happened to you? I just took a little time to decide what I wanted. In fact, in this guided meditation we did, there's another guided meditation we do in the corporates where we end up under a tree in the meditation. And this is not an ordinary tree, it's called a kulpaviksha tree. It means it can fulfill any desire that you have immediately, kind of like Amazon Prime. Now, you're sitting there under the tree, everyone's in this meditative state, and then I ask the question, so what do you want? And I always, everyone's got their eyes closed except for me, and I always notice a shockwave go through the audience. And people almost, there's a visceral reaction. And when we open our eyes and we reflect, so many people say, I don't know what I want. I'm not sure. And this, it can happen, because I can be so absorbed in my life situation that I'm in angst, all the time being pulled from one situation to the next situation, not really being sure where I'm going. And if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you. Let's try it again. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Yes, Alice in Wonderland. What else? Another reflection. Be brave, live on the edge, and belt it out there for the whole world to hear. Come on. Yes,
like,
there she is.
I like your talk about doing service for others and being selfless in that way. I think if everyone had that same thought, even though in some ways it's selfish because you're giving of yourself to do service for others and it helps you grow, I think we would have such a much more peaceful world.
Such a nice point. Thank you for reflecting that. And you brought a really real philosophical twist in there, didn't you? And this is a very interesting point. It relates to the number line. What does it mean to be to do selfless service? And then you might say, well, you're doing it because actually it feels so good, so isn't that selfish then? The fact is, according to the Yoga Sutras and all the other philosophical writings on yoga, we actually do have a self. It's not that we're nothing. We're not dead stones. We have impetus. So it has to be expressed. It's not that we can actually become nothing. Even European philosophers said, I think, therefore I am. Even the act of denial of saying I don't exist is an act of consciousness. So there's no point at which you're going to actually become nothing. So what to use that living force for? If you use it for a higher purpose, it's actually perfectly aligned. And yes, you'll feel satisfaction, but it's not considered selfish in the way that you're residing in the realm of exploitation or the negative numbers. It doesn't create reactions. So it's very different from the selfishness of trying to take from the environment so that you can be better, and that means there are fewer resources for others. I studied a little economics, and I remember my first textbook in economics, and it said, economics is the science of scarcity. Do you remember that from your economics class? A science of scarcity, of scarce resources. It's the law of supply and demand. Dollar votes. How many dollar votes do you have? And how we use our resources. If you take more resources for yourself, you end up in the top 1%, then there are other people you're taking from, including other lower animals that you use to build your house, to eat, whether they're plants or animals. We live, it's according to the Vedas, jivo jivasya jivanam, one living being is food for another in the realm of exploitation. But in the realm of service, it's very forgiving. There's no karma being created there because your purpose is different. You're moving in the world for a different purpose. Thank you for bringing that out. That was really good. You want? Shall we try one more? Shall we be bold and try to get one more reflection? Everyone say yes. Oh, there she is in the back. Thank you. Hold that really close for the audience online.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I like the one which you talked about, the oscillation.
Yes.
The path of enjoyment and the path of
renunciation.
I really like it because so far I used to think that it's only the path of enjoyment, but it's really good.
That's true, yeah. And oftentimes we hear about spiritual life and people immediately think, that means I have to renounce everything, walk away from the world. But in one of the most famous books of the East, the Bhagavad Gita, the whole point is you can't walk away from the world. It's the teacher is telling the student in that book that you can't renounce the world because you have a certain nature. And you're going to, even if you walk away, you try to go to the forest, give up all your things, your nature is going to come out and you're going to interact with the world again in a different way. Rather, he said, work in service. Do what you do according to what your natural gift is. My friend who was driving me over here at Nantadev on the way was talking about how every person has a natural gift. Every person. When we talk about the world of equality in the world, what we can actually talk about where we're equal is that everyone has a gift. And it's unique. Everyone has a unique gift. And when you use that unique gift for selfless service, to help others in the world, it's the perfect combination. It's the alignment that gives perfect balance. So this is the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's how to develop a life of complete balance, of harmony, is using your gift for service. Okay, good reflections, really good. I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, that was like an 11. Okay, so we talked about what balance is. We talked about introspection and how important it is to take time to introspect because you live within this body. You might as well take a look at who you are. And what you are is more important than what you... Okay, everyone participate if you can. What you are is more important than what you... How do you like that anyway? How does that make you feel? I mean, you don't have to get anything more. The sense of satisfaction or balance can be summed up in one word, one of my colleagues said, and I really like this. What do you think the word is? What would you say? One word which describes complete satisfaction and balance. Peace. I'll give you a clue. It starts with an E, and it ends with a G-H.
Enough.
Everyone say enough.
Enough.
Enough. So this is mentioned in one of the yoga literatures. There's a famous statement about how developing oneself from the inside, getting inside balance, is synonymous with eating when you're hungry. So when you're hungry, you get nourishment, satisfaction, and your hunger goes away. Correct me if I'm wrong. In a similar way, when you're able to introspect and notice that what you are is more important than what you have, then you feel similarly satisfied. And when you're satisfied, you're balanced. When you can say, I have enough right now, I don't need anything else, then the world does not oppress you, and then you don't feel out of balance. You feel nourished, you feel satisfied, and you don't need anything else. Many philosophers have said this, but the wealthiest person, we could say, in Silicon Valley, do you know who it is?
Jesus.
It's the person who doesn't need anything. And Jeff Bezos, what's his name? Bezos.
Yes, Jeff. Not Silicon Valley.
Yes, not in Silicon Valley, but you know, in the realm of when I think of like who's got the most wealth, but then we might notice, we might take profit in noticing that very wealthy people don't necessarily look that satisfied sometimes. I mean, you know, they might be reaching out and trying to get all kinds of base types of enjoyment that's even embarrassing. That's available to people that don't have $1 billion. Possible, right? It's possible. So the real wealth means to feel satisfied, to feel enough. Okay. Attitude. This is something that helps in balance. So adjusting one's attitude. And is it possible, let me ask all of you, to adjust your attitude? Okay, just say yes. See, that was an attitude adjustment. Even if you're thinking, I'm not answering that. Can you adjust your attitude? Absolutely. You have the choice at any time to adjust your attitude. And your attitude has so much to do with your balance in life. And let me show you ways that that's true. For instance, if you're grateful, if you develop an attitude of gratitude, which means that you observe what you actually have now in your life, the situation you have, and you appreciate it. What thing that we just noticed at the beginning of the of our time together could you have a lot of gratitude for? That's seemingly free, and that you're something you're doing right now. Breath. Yes. Could you have gratitude for your breath? Is it possible? Say yes.
Yes.
It's possible. I mean, have you ever choked on a lozenge or something like that and then thought, this is my last breath? And then you got your breath back? And then did you think, like, hey, I don't care about my taxes anymore, at least I'm alive, right? So there's an infinite number of ways we can start with a focusing in gratitude on what I already have, starting with our breath. I mean, what if you had enough because you were breathing? And are there people that, you know, weren't breathing and they started breathing again and then they're thinking that? I heard an interview with a woman who was a music critic, and she had a near-death experience. She died and came back. She was revived. And she said, before my accident and my coma, she said, I was a snob, a music snob. I criticized everybody. And she said, after my accident and my near-death experience, I appreciated even elevator music. You know what elevator music is? Supermarket music. It's called Muzak. It's that stuff in the background, like the Beatles, and you know, you don't know why it's bothering you so much, but it's there. So she appreciated even that. So it's an adjustment to be able to appreciate the things we have in the world. So one of the ways to gain balance, and you'll notice it for yourself immediately, if you concentrate on gratitude and think, I'm really lucky for what I have. I can breathe. I mean, go like this. Go like this. If you can do that, you should feel really grateful. There's a lot of people can't. And I mean, just how valuable is this hand to you, by the way? Would you trade it for your house? Trade it for your salary? I mean, look at just from the material body that we've been given, you could actually enter within there and say, like, I'm, you know, walking down the street, how you feel? I feel great. I have my hand. I can breathe. I mean, how much is it worth to you? If you actually take the time to observe what you have right now, I said it's not as important what we have, it's more important what we are. But just from a point of view of what we've been gifted for temporarily, what we have in our position right now, we could really be unlimitedly grateful. You could enter into that. And when you have gratitude, you're balanced because you have enough with what you have. And if you don't have gratitude, if you let yourself go into the side of entitlement and you think, this isn't enough, I deserve more because, hey, look, it's me. And then it doesn't matter how much stuff you get. If you get $1 million and you feel entitled, you're going to think that's not enough. Is it possible to feel like you don't have enough when you have $1 million? How about 10 million? How about 1 billion? You could think, like, that's nothing. That guy's got 10 billion. You know, I'm just, you know, I'm nothing. So The numbers can go to infinity, the things can go into infinity, and I'll never be satisfied if I don't develop gratitude. And if you can get one drop of gratitude, like go to the mall and ask them sometime, what's the most expensive perfume shop that they have? What's the most expensive mall in the Bay Area? Stanford Shopping Center. Okay, you go to the most expensive shop and ask those guys. You know, you go up like, okay, what kind of perfume would you like? And he's like, no, I just want a little bottle of gratitude. Just this much. Just give me like, you know, one spray of it on my hand here. And every time I smell it, I'll feel grateful for everything. And it's like, will they give it to you? No. What?
Aveda
will give it to you. All right. So it's a rare substance, but you can get it. And it's the most valuable thing that you can get. And it'll bring balance into your life almost immediately. Now, here's a daring thing that you can do to change your attitude. And this is a little scary, so please brace yourself. And if you don't feel like being scared or on the edge, you can just go outside for a minute. We have a holding room out there. It's like a green room. It's very comfortable. And after we're done with this exercise, you can come back in. Anybody? Wow. Okay, here we go. So I want you to repeat after me. I live to be corrected.
I live to be corrected.
You did it. Give yourselves a hand. You said it. Come on, a little more. Yeah. Now, you have to try this. If you have a significant other, if you have people you live with, and the next time something comes up where you don't see eye to eye, why don't you try this mantra? Now, this isn't an invitation to become a doormat. It doesn't condone bullying by anybody, but it's an attitude change, that I see the world for the lessons it brings me. And one of the reasons I get off balance is because I think everything should go my way. Yes or yes? Yeah. Well, if I consider that my plan should be enacted no matter what, then I'll be out of balance, because there is a scorecard, that's a scoreboard that's being kept, and everybody in the world has a zero when it comes to fully enacting their plan, because it never goes exactly the way that we think. And even if we get exactly what we want, then it starts to diminish. So the real power of life, say the ancient Vedas, comes from developing this attitude of taking the lesson behind everything that comes from me, because that's the most valuable part. And then I'm not tipped over. I'm not out of balance, because whenever something happens to me that seems to be going against my will, and when it happens really fast, like a lot of things are happening, that's called a disaster. Like it's all being washed away, that's a disaster. If I'm able to develop the attitude that what's the lesson behind this, then I stay in balance, because I'm not after things staying in place, I'm after the lesson that comes with the changes of life. We're running out of time, so I'm going to give you the last, a very practical point about balance, and that is to unclutter. This is one of the points made in the famous yoga text called the Upadeshamrita, which is called the essence of advice for living a balanced life. And one of the terms that's used there in Sanskrit is called atyahara. Everyone please try it. Atyahara. Atyahara, actually, if you translate it literally, it means extreme eating. You know extreme sports? You ever seen that? Well, there's extreme eating also. Extreme eating or extreme collecting. It means collecting too much. Keeping more things than you actually need keeps us off balance, because we can't process them all. It becomes an overwhelming situation. Professional organizers will tell you, if you keep more things in your purview, in the place that you live, or like in your car, it amounts to what's called visual noise. Everyone say?
Visual noise.
Yeah, visual noise. And like the frog in the pan, they heat it up gradually until he cooks in there. So you collect more and more and more and more, and then pretty soon you think, Why do I feel so out of balance? It's, you got too much visual noise. You have too many things that you don't need. So in a very simple way, one of the ways that you can start tonight, and it's probably applicable to everybody here, get rid of stuff you don't need and see how you feel. It starts getting you back in focus and back in balance. Now that's externally. And anyone here, does that apply to you? That, are there any things that you have in your house or your car or your bag right now that you don't need? Not that, you know, we're going to collect them all, but go ahead. Anyone? What things can you think of that are extra, maybe, sitting around your house? A broken typewriter? Older what?
Older seats.
Older seats?
Receipts.
Oh, receipts. Old receipts, yeah. You want to hang on to those for like 20 years. There's so much stuff. I mean, if you start thinking of it, then you'll notice that you're carrying a lot of that around with you. And if you start to unclutter in your life, it's very practical, but it's very liberating and it helps you to stay on balance and stay focused. Now that's externally. Internally, Stephen Covey gave this model that is extremely useful for getting rid of extra thoughts that you don't need. Would you like to try it really quick? Say yes.
Yes.
Otherwise, we have to put you in that room over there until we're done. Okay, now make a big circle with your finger like this. Big. Really big. That's called your circle of concern. Say circle of concern.
Circle of concern.
Are there any things that you're concerned about in the world that you can do absolutely nothing about right now? Yes. One or two? More than two? Okay. If you start thinking of all the stuff that bugs you in the world that you wish you could do something about, and you notice that you can't, that's in your circle of concern. Now make a tiny little circle within the big circle. Really small. That's called your circle of influence. So you got two circles in your life. One's a circle of concern, the other one's a circle of influence. Now, if you focus on your circle of concern, which is very difficult to do because it's vast, then you'll be tipped over. You'll be out of balance. You'll be chasing things and giving your energy, your mental energy, and your attention, which is your most important asset. What's your most important asset?
Your attention.
Your attention. And where attention goes, energy flows. Say that one.
Where attention goes, energy flows.
That's worth millions of dollars. If you take that with you and nothing else, and you just use it, where attention goes, energy flows, you'll be properly directed. But if you put your focus on your circle of influence, that's what you can do something about right now, then you'll feel balanced. Because you'll feel like, I'm doing something worthwhile, and you actually have traction. And that's how you can winnow out in a very simple way with just these two circles, the internal clutter that's always there that keeps you out of balance. So we talked of a few concepts tonight. Some of them were very philosophical, even metaphysical, going into the realm of noticing that we're not our bodies. The body's just a vehicle that you're driving around in right now. And you can see it for yourself and notice that your eye is a lens, your hands have levers and pulleys. It's not you. You can observe that it's not you. You can even observe that you're not your thoughts. Because the thoughts are superfluous, you're the one witnessing them. Even your intelligence isn't you. It's something that's coming to you as a gift. And then we talked about three paths in life. There's the path of renunciation, giving up everything because you're so sick of it, or trying to grab onto everything and exploiting everything, and in this way becoming more and more entangled, or the path which is called the path of selfless service or dedication, working for a higher cause and using things in a higher service. Then you become unentangled and you become satisfied and balanced. We also talked about what balance is. It doesn't mean to be perfectly still. It means to know how to pull back to the center. And we also talked about a practical exercise, which is homework for anyone who will accept it, is to get what three things? A legal pad, because you got enough room. Give yourself enough room, right. And what else are you going to get?
Do not disturb.
A do not disturb sign. I recommend that anyway, if you want a little happiness in your life. Get a couple of them, take them with you wherever you go, and just hang them. You put one on your ear while you're working. And what's the third thing? Get a nice pen, or a cheap pen. Doesn't matter, as long as it writes. And sit by yourself for an hour. Give yourself 1 hour. And think, what do I want? Because as soon as you know what you want and you're clear on it, you're under that tree and the tree will give you anything you want, you're able to say, this is exactly what I want in my life, then you're going to have balance. And if you don't have that, you'll be tipping over every second, and it's really hard to pull back to the center, because if you don't know where you're going, try one more time. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. So those are a few thoughts for tonight. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we're over time, right? Who's running this show anyway? We're all by ourselves. It's like Lord of the Flies or something. What should we do now? Thank you. Okay, we'll take a few reflections. We have a few more minutes, I'm being told. It's coming down from higher sources. Okay, so reflect back anything that you're taking out of here in your pocket that you can use when you walk out this room. If somebody grabs you by the arm out there and say, what was that guy talking about in there? This is the one thing you're going to say. Go for it. Yes.
I live to be corrected.
Boy, is she bold. She likes to live on the edge. You try that a few times and see how it changes your attitude and your perspective of life. And watch the shock on the other person's face when you say, I live to be corrected. He's like, what? Yes, please, go ahead.
I have enough.
I have enough. Yes, I am enough. I like even better the way you put it, because you combine the two ideas. It's what we are is more important than what we have. And I am enough. That was brilliant, by the way. Thank you very much for that. What else?
Gratitude.
Gratitude. She said it right over there. Gratitude. You want to say anything more about it? Give her the mic quick.
I would like to think of it every day.
You'd like to think of it every day, gratitude.
Yeah.
Practice it.
Yeah. Okay.
Who's to stop you from practicing gratitude? I mean, there's no gratitude police to come around and say, yeah, you can't have gratitude. You're free to do that. You're a free person. You can have gratitude if you want. And once you enter into that realm of gratitude, no matter what you have, no matter what situation you're in, you can actually feel satisfaction and balance. A few more. We're on a roll. Keep going. Yes?
I like that I see the world for the lessons it brings me.
Yes.
And I think if you're in a somewhat good place in your life, that's easier to understand. But if you've lost a child or a family member.
Oh, it's not easy.
Like, what lesson are you getting from the world?
Exactly. And so it's one of the hardest things to do, but actually, in the teachings of Bhakti Yoga, which is the yoga of love and gratitude, it's the quintessential attitude to be able to actually take complete reversals of fortune and see the lesson and the blessing behind it. Not only just a lesson, but it's actually directing me to a higher cause. I'll just tell a quick story. One day I was gardening outside my house. And a little bird flew into my house. And I thought, birds don't belong in houses, at least not wild birds anyway. So I went into the kitchen and I said, I'm going to free you, little bird. And I started opening up the double-paned windows. It was an old house, 1927 house, just wood frame. So every time I'd open it, it made kind of a loud rattling noise. And the bird, being terrified, would fly into the next room. And so I went in the next room and said, bird, I'm really trying to help you. I actually like you. And I was trying to open the windows there, and little bird said, now you're after me. One room after the next. We went through the whole house, not that it's that big a house, but it came all the way back, did little bird, into the kitchen. And finally, she looked out and saw there was an opening in the windows that I had opened. With terror in her eyes, she looked at me as if to say, you tried to kill me, and now I'm going to fly free. And she went out the window. I sat down, remarkably, emotionally exhausted. And I started to reflect. And I thought, that's me. I'm like that little bird. There's so many circumstances in my life I'm interpreting. Somebody's trying to kill me. Somebody's trying to take away everything that's dear to me. But actually, if one thinks in gratitude and can trace back, there's a benevolence to the universe. There's a way in which everything has a very deep lesson, that the world is a kind of cosmic sensitivity training that's bringing me to my highest self. Then actually I'll see the hand behind that and appreciate it in gratitude. And that's definitely a very high concept. And thank you very much for bringing it up. Yes, right behind you.
Oh, responded to gratitude and your breathing is like, you know, when you have a common cold and you know your nose is all stuffed up and you have a sore throat, and all you want is to just like be better, right, and be like healthy. But I think that when we are healthy, we don't even think about those things, right?
Right.
My nose is fine right now, and I just walk around like, and I have other complaints, right? So I think it's very important, you know, to be grateful for when you're healthy or for anything you have, but you may not notice until.
It is. Yeah, I really like the point you're making and how you made it. It's really important. And it's a cultivation. We can actually cultivate gratitude. We can enter into it because we actually really do live in abundance. If you consider who we are and the kind of resources that we have anywhere in the world, no matter where we are and who we are, we have available to us remarkable skills, talents I mentioned in the meditation. If you have the ability to ambulate, if you can walk, that's one of the most amazing powers. Just to be able to walk up and down stairs or go a few feet is amazing. What to speak of see? Right now, if I'm not incorrect, most of you are seeing, you can look around the room. What is it? You could marvel at that. You could enter into any aspect of your life and go deeply into the idea of gratitude, and you won't be the same. Or you can slip into entitlement and think, I don't have enough, I should have more, and no matter how much you get, it'll never be enough. And this is one of the great teachings of the bhakti literatures. In fact, the great teacher, Shukadeva Goswami, starts off teaching his student, Parikshit, and he says, look at the universe and notice how giving it is. Like if you just look at a tree, it has fruits on it. What's inside of fruit? Seeds. Where'd that come from? It's an abundant world that we live in. And if we enter into that idea and see that there's abundance, and even, as I mentioned before, when there are reversals, they're bringing me to a higher stage of consciousness and awareness that I can be grateful for as well. So we've came together here, right here in Palo Alto, California, and we took more than an hour of our time. You took more than an hour of your time, and I'm really touched that you came in here with such a great audience also. And we churned a few ideas, and we proved through reflections that there are even a few of them that you can take it out of here in your pocket and you can apply them right away. Some of them are as practical as getting a legal pad and a pen, do not disturb sign, and giving yourself at least 1 hour to think, what do I actually want, and write down anything that comes to your mind and see how it clears your mind, and many other ideas. So I'm very, very grateful to have had this opportunity to be with you tonight, and I hope that at least one of the ideas sits with you well and it makes your life happier, more abundant, and that you can live in balance. Thank you very much. Now let's see, tell us what we've won.
Enough.
Enough. We don't want anything. Don't even tell us.
Well, thanks to Vaisheshika. Let's give her a round of applause. One more time. Thank you. Such a great inspirational talk. Actually, we got so many points, so many inspirational points from this talk. At least I'm taking a few back home, like gratitude, unpleasant your life, and many more. So we have such inspirational talks every month. We have conscious cooking class, and we also have meditation sessions every month. So please join our mailing list if you're not on our mailing list. We can see one of us to give your email address. And we also have some dinner, which will bring about a balance, which is ready to be served just outside in the waiting room over there. And also, please feel free to hang out for some more time. Vaisheshika will be here for some time, so you can bring your plate and then join him and have a discussion with him. And
And just I've mentioned that if I don't get a chance to talk to any of you afterwards, my website is listed on the bottom, and we regularly have Zoom calls in which as follow-ups to all of the talks where you can ask questions and we can go more deeply within the, so you can check it out. It's the URL is right there. Thank you.
Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, hey! Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman.